Snow remains piled in neighborhoods across the region. Does your puppy have cabin fever? This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Today on our pet show, we'll hear tips for making sure our pets get the exercise they need when freezing temperatures, snow, and ice make it difficult. And we'll talk with our experts about New Year's resolutions for our furry friends to keep our dogs and cats happy and healthy in 2025. Joining me now are University of Cincinnati Blue Ash College Program Director and Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells. Welcome back, Dr. Wells.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here again.
Great to have you here. Certified professional dog trainer and owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff. Thanks for being here, Nick.
Always a pleasure.
And MedVet Cincinnati veterinary nurse specializing in rehabilitation, Sean Zimmerman. Welcome to the program, Sean. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. And a quick reminder, the advice on our program is general in nature and is not meant to substitute for a visit with your veterinarian. Do you have questions about your pets? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. Okay, Nick, I'm going to start with you. When the weather is cold and snowy and icy, what are the best ways to help your dogs get exercise indoors?
It definitely can be a bit of a challenge, but usually leaning into some mental stimulation puzzle toys can be a great way to help to give our pups some activities. So we can do various different kinds of food or toy-based puzzles around our house to keep our dog occupied. I have one favorite for our dog called his squirrel ball, where I hide treats underneath these squirrels in a green ball, and then he rolls it around playing soccer with it almost as he gets all of those bits and pieces out. We can also make do with things that we already have around the house, such as taking a muffin pan, putting that on carpet, putting some treats in the muffin pan spots, and then putting toys or tennis balls on top so that our dog can forage for some treats without making too much noise or too much mess.
Wow. So it sounds like you're not necessarily a fan of like throwing a ball down the stairs or down a hallway and just letting your dog go crazy with that.
That's a great thing to bring up. So those are definitely options that can be great. Depending on what your space is available, those can be a lot of fun. I know Sean's going to probably chime in here in a minute, but my recommendation if we're going to be doing any ball throwing, especially with stairs, is I toss the ball up the stairs so that my dog is highly motivated going up, but is calmer coming down. Whereas if we were to toss the ball down the stairs, our dog might be leaping some of those stairs towards the end to get to that ball a little bit faster. So we wouldn't necessarily want to practice that without safety in place.
Ooh, Sean, tell me what you think about that. That sounds like, is that something that you deal with, leaping dogs injuring themselves when they're playing inside?
Yes, I do. I was reading through some of the articles that you sent, and I definitely do not think that fetching on the stairs is the best thing to do. I mean, I would recommend that being the last thing to do, but I do like what Nick mentioned where you would toss it up the stairs and then not down the stairs so that there would be a little bit more control, a little bit more exertion being given because of having to go up the stairs. But I would try to eliminate stairs from all the other, because there's so many other things that we can do.
What are other things that you would is there anything you'd like to add to what Nick mentioned?
I really liked when he mentioned the foraging for food or foraging for treats and hiding treats around the house to do like a hide and seek. You could also do hide and seek with yourself and the dog, having them learn how to go find it, where you hide something and have them look for it. And then just simple obedience things can be a great thing to brush up on during these months where it's harder to go outside.
Hmm. Dr. Wells, I've got a delicate question here for you. I'm going to throw it to you because since you're the doctor on the show. How do you handle bathroom breaks for your dogs when they don't want to go outside because of the snow or the ice or the temperatures, whatever it may be?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's really individual because, as we know, some of our dog friends do love being outside in this type of weather. And we might just need to be a little bit more conscious of the environment that they're going out into. We might need to shovel a space in the backyard. I've seen some great tips even on Facebook where people have put down a tarp before it snows. And then you just pull up the tarp so they have this nice, 10 by 10 spot of grass that they can go in because they may not want to go out into the snow. And that might even work for some of our smaller friends who don't like to touch things that are wet and cold. So, keeping that in mind, even my Labrador today, who loves snow, was really holding his feet up because he got a bunch of snow kind of packed up in his pad. So we have to be, conscious that they're not out there very long and clean out their feet really well when they come back in. And those are the dogs that do like going outside when it's cold. I think it's definitely much more of a challenge, with some of our dog friends who do not like cold weather at all. Obviously, we can bundle them up, and sometimes that will help. They do make, clothes that we can put on our dogs, and even little shoes or booties that will help protect their feet from that really cold and uncomfortable feeling. Some dogs acclimate to that very well. It's not something that you want to spring on them in the middle of a blizzard, but something you want to train them to so that they're used to it and understand the comfort level that comes from wearing those items. So that might be an in-between step that you can do. I would say that the last step, and I think Nick may have some thoughts on this as well, is allowing them to use the restroom in the indoors. I think some of our pets may get confused if we allow them to use the restroom inside. We already have some pets that have trouble making that distinction of the appropriate place to use the restroom. And I think if we allow it to happen at certain times and don't allow it to happen at other times, they can get a little bit confused at that. However, we know that, this may be a really difficult time. So maybe if we had a place set up inside where we had some, grass-like material or a type of surface that was more outside-like, that was nothing like the inside material, that was a very specific cordoned on place where they had permission to go when they absolutely refused to go outside, that might be an appropriate in-between step.
Are puppy training pads something you can use for that? I mean, I don't even know if those work. I'm a crazy cat lady, so I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah, again, for me, I think that kind of blurs the line between where your appropriate places to go to the bathroom are and your non-appropriate places because, yes, we use those puppy pads when we have puppies and we kind of line our areas that the puppies are hanging out because they're going to have an accident. But then those look very much like a towel or the normal floor. And so they kind of get that confused. But for a dog who has learned to use puppy pads and that is their appropriate place to use the bathroom, even if it's inside the house, then that might be a safe space for them to use it when they cannot go outside.
Did you want to weigh in on that, Nick?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. I'm in full agreement with everything that Dr. Wells was saying. Just to kind of build on that a little bit, yes, I think that we can set up an indoor space for our dog to use the restroom. When I'm talking with my clients about this, we're often talking about it during general potty training or house training. And this is often looking at what we often will call long-term confinement. This is going to be a space where we're going to have our dog or puppy sectioned off where we are going to present a legal space for them to use the restroom. This is often utilizing a playpen, but this could also utilize another space that's just generally easy for us to clean, especially if we can otherwise manage our puppy's access to that or our dog's access to that, so that we can kind of provide some more contextual cues that this is a okay thing for you to do under this circumstance. But when this pen or this space is not normally set up, then that helps to kind of convey that this is not something that is going to always be available. Now, if we are having trouble convincing our dog to go to the restroom, either outside or in the house in a legal space, what I'm often going to be suggesting is giving multiple short opportunities to use the restroom. Whether we're going outside or going to the space in the house, we would bring our pup or our dog into that space for no more than, say, 2 to 5 minutes to give them an opportunity to use the restroom. And then if they don't do that, then we would want to bring them back inside or move them out of that legal space with us, either directly supervised supervising. So we can see any signs their dog is thinking of going to the restroom on the rug or on the carpet, or we would want to confine our dog into their crate for 5 to 20 minutes and then give them another opportunity to have that appropriate elimination outside or in our legal space, so that we're giving multiple short opportunities, but not letting it go on too long, where our dog may learn that if they continue to hold it, they can extend their freedom or their time outside.
So it's like asking your kids 15 times, do they need to use the restroom before a long car ride? That kind of thing.
Exactly. Or instead of just asking, we're giving them multiple opportunities. We're saying, hey, let's just go to the restroom and just hang out there for a minute.
Right. We're talking about pets for the full hour today, and we have a panel of experts here to take your questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Joe. Joe writes, I'll take our dog to Lowe's on a snowy day. Also, we'll drive through Spring Grove Cemetery. All the squirrels cavorting about gets him jazzed up and he's exhausted when we go home. Wow, that's an idea. How about a car ride if it's safe to drive around? Can that be something to kind of stimulate your dog and make him excited, wear him out a little bit?
Absolutely. I think that really dovetails off what Nick was talking about with that mental stimulation. Anything that you can do to decrease the boredom and give them some activity, if you have a safe car and it's safe to drive around outside, I think that's awesome. Now, some dogs do get stressed when they go in the car, so you need to know your dog and, again, train them to enjoy car rides or, you know, acclimate them to this activity before, you know, the middle of winter. Go for short rides and build up that time. But if you have a dog that enjoys being in the car, I would absolutely recommend that. I've actually taken my dog just, you know, to go pick up something, you know, through the drive-through and then back just for a 10-minute drive, just so he's getting out of the house because I can't take him for a walk that particular day.
Yeah, I think that all of that is really good ideas. One thing that I would add to that, in addition to the visual stimulation that our dog can kind of get from just looking out the vehicle, one thing I love to do is I love to have a couple of the windows cracked in my vehicle. And when I do that, I love seeing the change in the dog's face and the their reactions as soon as they start to have this fresh air that's kind of cycling through the vehicle, and you can see them sniffing and getting a lot of stimulation that way as well.
Okay, now unrelated question. I'm going to ask this question to you, Dr. Wells. Is it true that when a dog is sticking their whole head out of a window, are they getting high?
That's a great question. I've not heard that before, but I could definitely see that they're just getting accosted with all of the different smells and everything. They do have a special gland in the top of their nose, just like cats do, that humans do not have, that really assaults them with all of the different smells that are in the wind. And so if you are in, you know, like if we're on a roller coaster, for example, and we're getting buffeted with all of that wind, just like if they've got their head out the window, I definitely could perceive that they're getting buffeted with a bunch of smells, which could be intoxicating for them. So I could kind of make that association. Okay. I did want to comment. I love Nick's ad there about, you know, adding in the smells, because that's kind of what they get on the their walks. They're smelling the grass and the trees and everything. So I love that comment. I just wanted to add in, it's important to make sure your pet is safely secured in the car. I know he said just crack the window, but you know, if you roll the window all the way down and your pet has the ability to jump out of the car, that can be very dangerous, obviously. So let's have a seatbelt on, and let's make sure our pets cannot get their whole body out the window.
I think that's a great idea. And then I would just add in, I usually will lock the windows after I crack them, just so that kind of thing can't happen, because they can step on it and open those windows more and you don't realize it until it's halfway down.
Yes, yeah. Great point.
Yeah, that's a great comment. This is a warm weather problem, as I have a friend years ago who had a convertible and her pug jumped out of the convertible while it was moving at a slow speed. And that's just, it was a nightmare. So yes, great tip. What about, I mentioned I'm a crazy cat lady. What about indoor outdoor cats or cats that live strictly outdoors? A lot of us have kind of community cats. Are there tips for keeping them warm and safe? And I guess I'm wondering, Sean, do you see injuries in cats that are maybe outdoor cats that are more common in this kind of icy, snowy weather?
I don't see a whole lot of injuries when cats are in this type of weather, but I do see some injuries from indoor-outdoor cats or cats that accidentally got out. And then also some injuries that just happen in the house. But one of the things that we can do to help with the neighborhood cats or indoor-outdoor cats is providing them a heated enclosure. And it's also really important to make sure that if you use a heated enclosure that you use straw and not blankets, because those can get wet and then the animal can freeze to them. So it's really important to make sure you do your research before making one, or when you do line it with something, make sure it's hay, and provide fresh water, you know, so that they're not frozen and trying to drink out of frozen. That's not going to help them. And then also providing them some food. But it's always better to have them stay indoors, in my opinion. But I know that some people choose to do both, which is totally, totally fine.
Yeah. Yeah. What are the injuries that you see? Are there injuries in cats that are more common in the winter, even if they're indoor cats or indoor outdoor cats that are more common this time of year?
Honestly, not that I can think of off the top of my head, just more general cats, like not just winter things, but just things like a cat being stuck in a tree. I had a patient who kind of got caught and damaged his leg. And then, and I guess that could happen any time of year, but I can't think of anything specifically that would be for cats injuring themselves at this time of year. Dogs for sure, but not that I can think of with cats.
Yeah. What about the dog injuries? What do you see more commonly this time of year?
Slipping. And when they slip, they can cause muscle strains, specifically in the iliopsoas muscle group, which is also what we would call the groin. And then we can also see traumatic cruciate tears, which is a ligament in the knee that stabilizes the knee. And of course, if it's really bad and they slip, they could fracture something.
Okay, well, we are going to continue our pet show after a short break. Remember, we've got experts here who can answer your questions. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're talking about pets for the full hour today and getting tips from our experts to keep our cats and dogs healthy and happy in the new year. My guests are University of Cincinnati Blue Ash College Program Director and Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells, Certified Professional Dog Trainer and owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff, and MedVet Cincinnati Veterinary Nurse specializing in rehabilitation, Sean Zimmerman. Do you have questions or comments? Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk at wvxu.org. And I know we have a caller on hold. Stick with us. We will be with you as soon as we can. Okay, Dr. Wells, you brought this up, that sometimes you can acclimate a dog to wearing a little jacket or coat or little booties to go outside. If dogs really love this kind of weather and really want to go outside in the snow and the ice, do they need that? Is that important to make sure they're willing and good at wearing that kind of clothing and the little shoes and booties?
Great question. I think, it depends a lot on the individual and how long you're going to be out and what type of environment. I would use caution, especially times like today or this week where we're going to have a lot of salt out, where, you know, either the plows have put salt out or people have put salt in their sidewalks or driveways, because that can be harmful and irritating to the dog's paws. Oftentimes they'll come back, they'll lick their feet. So if they're going to be in contact with that for a short period of time and they don't have boots on, I would definitely kind of wash their feet off with some warm water when they get home. So secondary to that, if it's, you know, if it's a larger dog and they have a lot of protection on their feet, and you know, if I'm thinking like the Huskies and the Labs, the water breeds, a lot of those dogs kind of have a double coat and they are more than happy to be outside for a short period of time, you know, a 15, 20 minute walk. Remember, they're exercising just like we are. So they're going to kind of increase their body temperature while they're walking. Again, making sure that we're not going to, you know, let them slip on the sidewalk or, you know, get into a situation where they're unsafe. But if we're in a safe area, we can do a shorter walk than normal. That's going to be great exercise for them. Now, if we're looking at a dog who does not have a really, you know, robust hair coat, those dogs, even going outside to use the restroom, we're probably going to want some sort of a sweater or even more protective windblock sort of coat on. And again, those dogs that have really dainty feet oftentimes will appreciate having some sort of booties or shoes on, and they can provide a lot of protection and warmth, just like it does for us wearing shoes. I don't want to go outside without shoes on, and I'm sure our little chihuahuas and, you know, little dachshunds do not want to go outside without clothes on either. So I think that acclimating to them to those types of clothing items, especially if you notice that your dog really doesn't appreciate going out, you know, once it starts getting a little bit colder, they don't like touching wet things, that might allow them to actually continue doing those normal behaviors, whether it's a short walk or going outside to use the restroom, even when the weather is not great.
You mentioned sidewalk salt and ice melt and that sort of thing, being careful if that gets on your pet's paws. Nick, what about sharp ice? Is that something that can be, you know, treacherous for dogs going out in this weather?
Yeah, I think it definitely can. It depends, again, on the individual dog. So some dogs are going to have thicker pads that feel a bit more robust, a bit more hardened. So they are probably going to be handling that better. Whereas if we have pups who have softer paws, which could be our larger breeds as well, not necessarily that they are going to always have thicker, stronger pads. Every dog could have kind of soft pads depending on what they are used to dealing with. And so if you have a dog who has softer pads, you're either going to want to look at acclimating them to some booties, preferably before we're at this point, or kind of being very intentional with the areas that you are walking your dog and making sure to check their pads regardless when you get back in for any abrasions, any salt, anything along those lines.
We do have a couple of callers on the line. Hi, Michelle. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. I have a miniature golden doodle. Her name's Beatrice, and she's 9 years old. And she'll lay on the couch, and she'll sometimes lick the air. And I know that sounds weird, but, like, she'll stick out her tongue and start, like, licking the air. And then I'll look at her and say, Bea, stop that. And she'll stop. And then she'll start doing it again. And I just didn't know if maybe the experts there could have some type of insight as to why she does that.
I love this dog. My grandmother was named Beatrice, and I'm a fan. So let's try to get you an answer. Dr. Wells, any thoughts about Beatrice's air licking?
Yeah, that's a great question. And again, I love the name too. So of course, in a veterinary world, my mind always jumps to what's the worst thing this could be? So don't panic. You know, this is just what popped into my brain. I'm always going to ask if you have talked to your vet about this, and I'm going to recommend, you know, maybe bringing it up at your next appointment. Sometimes when we see these types of little repetitive type behaviors, they can be related to very, very minor seizures. Activity. And again, I don't want you to panic because I said that, because it absolutely could be a behavioral component or something where, you know, again, she might be getting some smells out of the air and taking them up to that vomeral nasal gland that I mentioned before. But I have seen those types of repetitive behavior. Sometimes it looks like chewing gum behavior. Sometimes it's licking. Sometimes it's little short mouth movements and looking up in the sky. Sometimes those are linked to kind of excitatory brain activity. And so, you know, again, me just always jumping to what could it be in the, you know, medical world, I would want you to bring that up to your vet the next time you're in there for an appointment. And certainly if it got worse or she doesn't respond to you when you talk to her, like if it doesn't seem like she's able to stop that behavior, then that would make me more worried. If it seems like it's just like, you know, I'm licking peanut butter off the top of my mouth. Maybe that's all it is. She got a treat stuck in her teeth, or, you know, she's just trying to get something off the roof of her mouth, or she's, you know, again, getting some smell that out of the air. But those are my ideas.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'll talk to the vet. And then it's funny because she'll be sitting on the couch. I'll say, see, quit that. And she'll look at me. She'll stop. And then all of a sudden she'll stick her tongue out at me and then turn her head. So it's like, okay, great. I'll bring it up to her vet then. Thank you,
Michelle. Thank you. Did you want to add anything, Nick? I thought I heard you started to say something.
Yeah, so I would echo everything that Dr. Wells said. In addition to that, from kind of like the behavioral standpoint, a couple of things that I might look at is we can sometimes see lip licking as a bit of a stress or displacement behavior. So depending on the context that we see that occurring, that might be related to that. And then there are also times where I've seen dogs who maybe are scratching an itch on their body. And as they're kind of addressing that itch with like their leg, they're kind of licking in unison with it. So we can also see sometimes those silly little behaviors as well.
Great. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for calling, Michelle. Thanks for listening to the show. Best of luck with Beatrice. I love her. I've never met her. Love her already. And now we have Catherine on the line. Hi, Catherine. What's your question?
Hi, Mom.
Oh, hi, Katie. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling.
Of course. Well, as you know, I have two boy indoor cats, Billy Butt Cheeks and Bean, and I'm trying to help them lose some weight, and I was wondering what the healthiest treat options are for them.
What a great question. Do you have thought to, who has thoughts on that? I don't know if you have thoughts, Dr. Wells, or I don't know if you have anything you recommend, Sean, if you have some hefty cats you're trying to rehabilitate.
I think that one way to lose weight is to make sure that you're feeding them a certain amount, like twice a day, as opposed to letting them free feed. And then also you can have the food be distributed in different areas of the house that they have to go forage for it. And as far as treats go, I would just limit the treats. I think that it depends on what you're using the treats for. If they're to reward a behavior, that's different than just throwing a treat in their direction just to give them a treat. So think about, I guess, why you're treating them. But I do think that Nick probably has some good ideas too about as far as best ways to treat. I just do think that having them move around as much as possible, playing with them, giving them really great cat escape routes through the house with shelves and things like that, and cat trees, just gives them an opportunity to be a little bit more active.
Did you want to add to that, Nick? I know you're a dog trainer, but you have cats.
That is true. In fact, one of my cats has been cuddled up with me this whole time. Again, I echo everything that Sean has said. So I don't have any specific treat recommendations as it relates to cats. However, I will say that as I'm working with dogs, one of my main go-to treats that I use, and they do make these for cats as well, is a brand of dog food called Zeewee Peak. They make this for cats as well. And what I like about this is it tends to be a very high value, highly sought after food for the animals, but it's a complete balanced diet. And so that is one of the reasons why I like to use it. It's actually the predominant treat I use for all of the dogs I work with, so that I can feel really okay about giving the dogs lots of treats while I'm training with them. But if we can also incorporate some other activities, movement, and other games into this, I think that that can be a lot of fun. So we could even just simply incorporate moving from room to room to encourage our cats to follow us and get another treat when they kind of arrive at point A, B, or C. I've even taught my cats some stationing exercises where I want them to position on the cat tree at certain locations or spots for keeping them in one space when I have people coming over, or to keep them out of the way of other activities that are going on.
That's great. Anything you wanted to add, Dr. Wells? I want my daughter to get the best possible advice with this question.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with what Sean and Nick just said. And I would just add in, I would love to know, and maybe your daughter could briefly answer this if she's still with us, but are your cats eating dry food or wet food right now, or both?
I give them only a quarter cup of dry food once a day, and then they get two portions of wet food twice a day.
Okay, awesome. So I kind of wanted to find out if they were already on wet food, because some cats won't eat it if they aren't already eating it. Because wet food, actually, as high value as it is, it actually has a lower caloric density because of the water content. So I wanted to see if they were already on that, because that's a good thing. And then I'm going to echo what others have already said about, kind of increasing the activity related to maybe the dry food. Cats are usually very motivated to eat their dry food. And I don't know if your kitties are like this, but when you put the dry food in there, they hear it hit the bowl and then they gobble it all up. So what I might suggest doing, if your cats are like this, is put those dry food kibbles into some sort of a food or treat dispenser. So treat it like a treat. It is part of their calculated food, which I love that you said you already know exactly how much your cats are eating, because that's the first step, acknowledging the problem and, kind of recognizing how much they're eating already helps you kind of change that behavior or cut back on what they're eating. And so if you already know that they're eating, a quarter cup of food, then you could take that food, that quarter cup, and put half of that into a treat type thing, which they make a ton of them, where you stuff it in there, the cat has to roll around a ball and they fall out, very similar to what I think Nick was talking about earlier with his dog. And that will work for a cat too. So they're not just sitting at the bowl eating that dry food, they're chasing that ball around the room, and they have to work a little bit for that food to come out. And I personally, if your cat loves the dry food, I think a cat will work for that dry food more than even the treats. And then exactly what Sean said before, use the treats for some high value sort of activities. Make your cat jump up and down off a couch or a chair so they're getting a little bit of exercise while they're doing that. Or give them the treat after you have played with the birdie or the laser pointer or whatever it is that you're doing to increase their activity level, so that they've gotten their reward there. They've killed the mouse and they're getting their reward. So that's what my suggestion would be to add on.
You can also be sure to rotate your toys out. So you don't necessarily have to go get new toys all the time, but you could have a collection of toys that you leave out for a week or two and then try new ones, so that they keep their curiosity up of the toys that they have, which will keep their activity levels up, which then will reduce they'll burn more calories.
I hope that helps, Catherine. I can vouch. Catherine's a very good cat mom, so I can vouch that she's doing good things. I hope that helps.
It does. Thank you all. This was awesome. I love you, Mom.
I love you, too. Bye.
She must have gotten her cat genes from you. Huh?
Yes. I raised two crazy cat ladies in my own image. We also have Ginger on the line. Hi, Ginger. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Hi. I've had at least two cats that lived to be 21 years old, and one was around the 1980s, and the other one I had around 2016. And what they both had in common, one had one parent was Siamese, and the other parent was domesticated shorthair. And I was wondering if there's any breeds of cats that tend to live longer.
No, that's a great question. Anybody have thoughts on that?
I'll start. First off, congratulations on having cats live that long. You must be a really great cat owner. I have a cat who's approaching his 20s right now, and so I can appreciate the work you need to do to keep them healthy for that long. I have heard somewhere, and I cannot pull up the paper or anything like that, so this may be anecdotal, that the Oriental breeds sometimes do live a little bit longer. So your statement that they had some Siamese in them might have some truth to it, but again, this is not scientifically backed. In general, though, we do feel like our mixed breed animals, whether it's a mutt, dogs that have multiple breeds combined, or our cats that have more than one breed together, generally we feel that there is, we call it hybrid vigor, is kind of the term that we use. where if you don't have a purebred, if we've got multiple breeds together, a lot of times we kind of get the best of all of the different mixed breeds in there, and that allows them to live longer. So in other words, if you have a purebred animal, you know, whether it's a cat or a dog, oftentimes we've done a lot of breeding or inbreeding to get that specific look or that specific color or whatever it is for that particular animal. And that kind of may turn on some genes that would maybe allow that particular breed to develop cancer earlier or to develop arthritis earlier or other things. And so when we have these mutts, which we all love, oftentimes those genes are not turned on and those animals can live a longer, healthier life because they do not have that kind of inbreeding that potentially allows some of those more negative characteristics to come out. So I do not have anything scientific. Maybe somebody else on the panel does, but that is my take on that. But again, congratulations on having some kitties make it over 20. That's an accomplishment.
It really is. Anybody else have anything, Sean or Nick, anything you'd like to add to that?
I had one to live to be a 20 and one to be about 19 or so. And it is I love having those old cats and they're great.
Yes.
But the only thing I can say, and I don't want to poo-poo anybody who lets their cats out, but they, you know, they do tend to live longer if they're indoor only cats.
Yep. Definitely. Well, thanks so much, Ginger. Congratulations to you for being a great cat mom, and thanks so much for listening and for calling. Okay. Well, we are going to take another quick break. We're going to continue our pet show after that. If you have questions for our experts, now is the time to call. The number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with today's pet show. My guests are University of Cincinnati Blue Ash College Program Director and Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells, Certified Professional Dog Trainer and owner of Paws, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff, and MedVet Cincinnati Veterinary Nurse specializing in rehabilitation, Sean Zimmerman. Do you have questions for them? Give us a call. The number is 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Okay, before we took all those wonderful phone calls, we were talking about dressing up dogs if they need little jackets or booties or shoes. Is there any chance in the world you could get that kind of gear on a cat? I don't know.
I think every video I've seen of a cat, like in a sweater, they just like fall over, right? But having said that, I do think that you could train your cat to do almost anything, like most cats. As Nick was saying, using those high-value treats, training them in a slow, non-threatening way to wear some type of lightweight, non-constricting clothing, I think definitely could work. Now, this is not appropriate for a cat that lives outside because those cats need to be able to get through tight spaces and you wouldn't want any clothing or something that they're wearing getting caught and constricting them or, you know, potentially causing harm. So, you know, this is not for that cat. But if you had a cat that walked on a leash and, you know, it was just chilly outside and they wanted to go out, then maybe you could train them to wear a little jacket along with their harness. So this is probably already a very trainable cat if they're walking outside on a harness.
Yeah. Have you ever had success with that, Nick? Have you ever gotten your cat to model some clothes and get out there on a leash?
I've never done it with clothing itself, but I have done it with leash and harnesses with both my cats as well as other cats with clients as well as family members. A lot of cats do kind of like just have an automatic reaction of kind of going just like stiff and falling over, as we've all seen those videos. Yeah. But kind of continuing to acclimate them gradually, same way that we would honestly for a dog. I've worked with several of my clients recently with that for costumes for Halloween, as well as for holiday photos, is definitely a good way to go about it. Another option, if we are just wanting to kind of take our cat out, but not necessarily have them loose or on a leash, I should say, is looking at the various different types of like backpack carriers that would allow you to have your cat with you more safely contained. And that would help you to avoid the acclimating to the specific gear, but that just kind of keeps them more kind of like an observer in the situation.
Yeah. Great tips. We have another caller on the line. Hi, Ruth. Thanks so much for calling. What's your question?
Hi, thank you. I feed my dogs Simpatica, I think it is, for a flea, tick, etc., heartworm. And when it's like this, can I skip a month? I mean, you know, we've had a hard freeze. It's very tempting.
Oh, I love this question. I will say I have been in veterinary medicine since, the mid-80s, late-80s, and it was very, very common for us even to skip our heartworm prevention, heaven forbid, in the wintertime because, you know, there's no mosquitoes out there. I will say, though, with fleas especially, your dog... most dogs are not living outside. They're living inside. And most of the fleas are inside, right? So the larvae, the eggs, all those developing stages are actually in, they're chilling inside with us or warming inside with us. And so, yes, they're probably not likely to come across a new flea population outside when it's frozen outside. But if there are any lingering populations of fleas inside anywhere that dog goes, there is a possibility that they're going to pick that up. And then if you couple that with the fact that we do, despite this week's temperatures and snow, we do have very fluctuating temperatures. And we know that fleas do not take a lot of time and temperature rise. It only takes a couple of days of like 45 to 50 degree weather to actually have our fleas start hatching out again outside. And so we know that we can get those in December, January, February. And so it's just for my peace of mind and seeing a lot of dogs that have allergies to fleas and how difficult it can be to get rid of that flea infestation in the house, skipping one dose doesn't really give me peace of mind. And I recommend just staying on it. And then there's also that part where you're just like, you know, one dose becomes two doses, and then all of a sudden it's April, and then you have a flea issue that you have to deal with. And so for me, I think it's just easier to stay on it. You know, if you accidentally skipped a dose in the middle of the winter, you probably have less chance of having a problem than if it's in the middle of summer and they're out walking and going to the dog park. But I think most veterinarians that you talk to are going to recommend that they stay on it year round. Mm.
And if I could add to that, especially during this time of year, if you have a social dog that goes to places like dog daycare that you're going to be relying on much more heavily during this inclement weather, those would be the types of places that they would also be more likely to come across other dogs who've maybe got some fleas. And so that would be another easy exposure place that we may not necessarily think about.
Mm. Well, best of luck with your dogs, Ruth. I'm sorry we didn't have a better, skip that medicine answer for you. But I want to get your thoughts on this, Sean. We were talking about New Year's resolutions for dogs and cats. What do you think about these gadgets and gizmos that are out there? They're treadmills and exercise wheels for our pets. Are those good things to have in the house? I walk past a cat cafe and see big old cats just sleeping in the wheel most days.
Sorry, I did just see a reel on something of some cats doing the wheel thing, and some of it was awesome and some of it was scary because the wheel fell off. Yeah, I know. But I do think that properly trained and educated owners and pets could use an indoor treadmill for their dog pretty well, but I do think that the size of the treadmill needs to be taken into consideration, because if you have a large dog and say a walking treadmill or a shorter one of those shorter treadmills, the dog's stride length is not going to be accommodated, and so they could injure themselves by slipping off the back. But I don't think that's a bad thing to think about. Like, if you have an area where you could have that and make sure that you train your dog correctly and train yourself on how to do it. And then also the cat wheels. I was, when I saw that reel, I was thinking to myself, should I get one? I want to get one for my cat. Maybe that would be kind of cool. But I do think that you can just, you know, keep your cat occupied with toys and fun things to do and not necessarily have to get that wheel that might not stay where it's supposed to. And then there's also the activity trackers. I have only experienced myself with one of them, and I was actually getting it because I have a dog that has epilepsy. I wanted to see if it helped track his seizures when I wasn't around to be there to see him have them and to see if I was missing any. But I don't have a whole lot of experience with those. However, I do know that they can help give you an idea as to whether or not your dog is moving around more at home. There's even ones for cats that can tell you whether or not they're moving around at home. But I don't know if they're necessarily something that's worth the investment.
Yeah, might just be something that worries you a lot without knowing what to do about it if you're getting those pings all the time. Well, this has been terrific. I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Blue Ash College Program Director and Professor of Veterinary Technology, Dr. Jennifer Wells, Certified Professional Dog Trainer and owner of Pause, Look, Listen, Nick Hoff, and MedVet Cincinnati Veterinary Nurse specializing in rehabilitation, Sean Zimmerman. Thank you all so much for your time today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Her helper today is her son, Dorian. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. I'm Lucy May. Thanks so much for listening.